Welcome to another edition of San Luis Valley Voices, a production of SL Voices, your voice in the San Luis Valley. Without further ado, enjoy the program.
In life, things happen beyond our control. Those things can be emergencies or temporary disasters such as flooding, overwhelming snowfall, and wildfires, just to name a few. Those involved, both victim and volunteer, need to know how to respond and who to contact in order to offer their time, effort, and skills in the most effective manner. Thankfully, we have people like Kay Crowder from the San Luis Valley Regional Emergency Preparedness and Response Team, Emily Brown, the Public Health Director for Rio Grande County, and Will Barton from the San Luis Valley Behavioral Health Group, plus so many others who work tirelessly to create organized policies and procedures and even show up on scene to offer assistance and direct people to proper resources. They also know the best way to organize volunteers, from professionals to everyday caring community members who want to help. But wanting to help is just the first step. We need to know how to prepare as well as volunteer in different capacities when help is most needed, and how the organization of that assistance can be done in the most efficient way to meet whatever the needs may be at the time. Let's listen and learn so we can respond accordingly as individuals and as communities. Learn how we can all be prepared, not scared.
September is National Preparedness Month here in the San Luis Valley and around the country. We have the unique opportunity to sit down and talk with several people here about what's going on this month. Joining us is Kay Crowder, Emily Brown, and Will Barton. We'll go around the table, introduce everybody, and find out what's going on. Kay, you are the San Luis Valley Regional Emergency Preparedness and Response Generalist.
Yes.
That's quite a title. What does that mean?
That is a mouthful. It means I work for emergency preparedness and response for public health under this 6-county region here. And we basically, me and my partner, Linda Smith, we work to help the public health agencies write plans and prepare for emergencies.
Wow. Where are you originally from?
I'm originally from Anchorage, Alaska.
And how did you end up in the San Luis Valley then?
I went to school at CSU in Fort Collins and had family down here and ended up down the San Luis Valley. Been here for 20 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. What do you wish you had known when you started out?
I wish I had known how much I would enjoy it. The way it was described, it's really hard to describe exactly what I do. And so when I first heard about it, I didn't apply the first time. And my supervisor, who's also my friend, came to me and really convinced me to apply. And then I just found that I really enjoy what I do.
That is great. Emily Brown, you are the Public Health Director for Rio Grande County, the co-chair for the San Luis Valley Health Care Coalition, and you're involved with VOAD as well. Goodness gracious, when do you have time to do anything for yourself?
That is the joy of being in public health. It is involved in anything and everything you do. Yeah, I'm the director for the public health department, and I like to explain public health as, especially at the governmental level, it's helping to ensure that everyone in the community has the opportunity to be healthy where they live, learn, work, and play. And one of those pieces of my job is ensuring that in an emergency, we continue operations and we continue to be healthy. So that's where the Healthcare Coalition and VOAD come in.
Where are you originally from, Emily?
I'm actually from here. I'm about 7 miles north of the studio. So I grew up here. My family farms, and went away for school and lived in Nevada for several years and have been back in the Valley for about 5.5 years. So happy to be back in the area.
That is great. What do you wish you had known when you started out with all these positions that you're in?
I don't know. I don't know that I would have wanted to know more, because it's one of the things I like about public health is that you're always learning and always having these new opportunities to be involved. But I do think that it would have been helpful for me to know how much public health can be involved in different places in the community, because can be connected in a lot of places you're not expecting, like immunizations or rabies shots.
Oh, wow. Rounding out the group here, Will Barton. Hey, Will, you're the recruiting and marketing specialist for the San Luis Valley Behavioral Health Group. Welcome to the studios.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. So recruiting and marketing, that's what you focus on?
Primarily, yes. I find the clinicians and the specialists to meet with people, and then I try to find the people to meet with the specialists.
So you're connecting people.
Right.
That is awesome. Where are you originally from, Will?
I'm originally from Geneseo, Illinois.
Okay, and then how did you end up in the San Luis Valley?
My previous employment required me to travel a lot, and I happened to drive through the valley, just kind of fell in love with it. So I was already looking for new employment and ended up finding this position, and I really enjoy it.
Well, as far as recruiting and marketing for 10 Lewis Valley Behavioral Health Group, what do you wish you had known when you started out?
What behavioral health was? I think all of us have this different definition of mental health or behavioral health. Not everyone has the right vision of what it is. I wasn't sure what it was. I thought of maybe a bunch of kids with massive behavioral problems and straitjackets. I had no idea what it was. So it's been exciting to learn what mental health is, what behavioral health is, and share that with the public.
Well, let's jump right into things. We've got an event coming up, September 28th. Kay, you want to talk about the when, where, and why?
There's going to be a workshop for the community called How to Prepare for Everything. It's based on a book by Aaron Titus. It's going to be Saturday, September 28th from 9 to 11 at Calvary Baptist Church in Monte Vista. And registration begins at 8:30. And the book by Aaron, he really wants to emphasize that we should prepare for disruptions rather than disasters. So that means that rather than get really overwhelmed with all the things you have to prepare for, you know, in the case of a hurricane or earthquake, you start really small by focusing, for instance, on power outages, which could happen in multiple things. So that's basically the premise of his book.
What you're saying, this isn't really one of those tinfoil hat kind of let's go hide in the woods things. This is more realistic. This is what happens if, as you said, the power goes out, or we have, God forbid, a trucker strike or any one of a number of things, an avalanche, and trucks can't even get in and out of the valley. What do you do?
Right. It's for everyone, basically. Everyone is impacted by disasters or disruptions somehow. It's an individual effort, but it's also a community effort. And another thing he emphasizes that's really important is the relationships between people, that when disasters and disruptions happen, people don't panic. You know, they're calm and they do what they're instructed and they come together and help each other out. So it's really about people. And in this workshop, we're going to be talking about FUD, which is fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And that's like the zombie apocalypse, you know. People think that's the best way to prepare, but it's really not. You don't want to be scared about things. You kind of want to have fun with it and, you know, again, have the community and come together and work with each other. And then there's going to be a workshop. We'll have people come together and brainstorm scenarios, disruptions, and then solutions for that. And then the ultimate thing that comes out of that is to help people create their own personal preparation plan, gap analysis, so things that they're missing, and personalized 72-hour kit. So rather than have these huge lists, which you can print out from the internet and get really overwhelmed, because there's a lot of information out there, rather than have these long lists that, you know, they have for everyone, you have your own personal list that you work from, and you start small and go from there.
Well, I'm going to say the theme this year for, you know, Emergency Preparedness Month is be prepared, not scared.
Exactly.
The whole point is you can get ready. Now, I understand there are other organizations here that can help people prepare as well.
Yes, FEMA, they have a website called ready.org. And I want to caution people not to get too mired in it because it does have a lot of information. So just start small. And the one page I would recommend to go to is their page for September, which was the Be Prepared, Not Scared. They have themes for every week. So week one just focuses, for example, on financial preparedness. And so it just starts out small with little projects. And even if you just do a few, it's enough to get you started.
Can you give me an example of financial preparedness?
You know, having an emergency fund, basically, which you hear about a lot. You know, you can use it to pay for a vet bill that you didn't expect, or you can use it to pay for, if you lose your house, some repairs there if you need. Again, just small things into big things.
Okay, that makes sense.
And I'd maybe just to tag on what Kay was saying, that something that we don't think about in the digital age is if the power goes down, you can't use the ATM and the credit card machines don't work. How to make sure that you are thinking about even just having a little stockpile of cash that you can use for minor expenses.
Exactly.
Good point. Now, this event going on September 28th, this is free, open to the public?
Yep, it's free, open to the public. Hopefully, we'll get some people from emergency management there and other preparedness organizations too that we can meet and get everyone to get to know them.
Well, Emily, let's talk about community volunteering opportunities through VOED and MRC. In a nutshell, if I understand this correctly, if there isn't an incident or an event or something going on, you don't just show up.
One of the things that is really exciting about this training event coming up is it's really focused on anyone in the community. And I'm going to talk a little more about government preparedness, because that's a really big piece of our infrastructure across the nation and here locally. But in a real emergency, it's not going to be the government that takes care of everything. It's going to be dependent on each individual and the community around each other. So having these opportunities to think about preparedness at an individual or community level are exciting. You talk about VOAD and MRC. So those are two organizations that are active here in the San Luis Valley. MRC stands for Medical Reserve Corps. So that's really an entity where you become a member and you get to do some kind of give information in advance. So when the emergency happens, you don't have to verify that you're a physician or that you've done these different trainings or that you've done some of the background work that oftentimes volunteers are needed to go through. And it also allows you to sign up so you can put your availability. You don't have to accept any volunteer opportunity, but you can pick and choose. So you can say you'd volunteer within a couple hour drive of your house, or you could volunteer nationwide. And so if that call comes out for volunteers, you can kind of give a little direction of how you want to be involved. And the VOAD is the similar idea, that it's trying to organize volunteers in advance, but it's a slightly different model. Medical Reserve Corps is at the individual level. You sign up as a person. VOAD stands for Voluntary Organizations Assisting in Disasters. So it's really about the organization level. And this is not government entities. So this is groups like the church you go to, or the Rotary Club you're involved in, or the Boy Scout agency that you're a member of. So it's an organization that already has members, and it helps maximize efforts. In an emergency, a VOAD would be contacted, and then they would put a call out to all their members, and they would be able to have a really efficient, streamlined response to get whatever volunteer effort was needed.
Well, I understand, too, that they're able to direct people with particular skills to areas where they're actually needed, such as like if you were a backhoe operator or something, you know, and they needed you in a particular area in this situation. That's part of what they do, is coordinate so people are where they're needed most.
Yeah, exactly. And I think just to go back to that government preparedness piece, since I'm coming from a county public health agency, we as local public health agencies across the nation all get some funding from the national level that is helping us make sure we're prepared for health emergencies like a flu pandemic. At the county level or town levels, those municipal or county level entities are also preparing. So there's a position like an emergency manager that's at the county level. There's positions that are in place to help coordinate all the efforts. So an emergency manager might work with the sheriff and the road and bridge department and the local police to take care of a flood or take care of a fire. We often see that when there's an emergency, like recently with the spring fire over in Costilla County, that everyone wants to show up and there's so much effort. People want to help because this is their community and they want to take care of their community. And there's these government entities that are helping to manage it or work with the Forest Service. And there's not always that communication of how to link in those community that wants to help with the actual needs of the fire. So you might get someone that shows up with a whole bunch of teddy bears to help the kids that lost their homes, or a whole bunch of food to feed the firefighters. And you realize after that there's no place to store the teddy bears. They got rained on because they were sitting outside and they all had to be thrown away. Or the food went to waste because it wasn't kept at a good temperature that kept it healthy, and then your firefighters already had fully stocked meals. So the idea of, especially with the VOAD, is that if your emergency manager or incident team identifies a need, they could put that call out. They could say what they need specifically, where they need it, when they need it by, and that can help the community come together and deliver something that's really needed in a very quick time frame.
Well, what role does public health play in all of this?
Public health is designated that in a health or medical emergency, we take the lead. So it might be something that gets turned over to hospital or turned over to ambulance, depending on what the emergency is. We are sort of a coordinating entity, so we can take a big overarching view. Really, almost any emergency or disruption has a health impact. So that could be smoke because of the forest fire. It could be concerns about oxygen because the power is off and you can't produce oxygen.
Compromised water systems.
Very much so, yes. So public health, one of the roles we play is sort of networking and convening. So we also have this role of being able to be part of the system. And instead of looking at just the clients in your clinic or just the county that you serve, it can be looking at that broader picture and helping to connect agencies that are doing great work.
Well, you said the government can't do it all. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Sure. You hear the joke that we're the government and we're here to help. And I think in government, that is a big part of why we go into government, because you're doing this work to take care of your community. And we have a lot of the infrastructure and a lot of the requirements that come down that say, this is how you'll do it. This is the best practice. This is how you have an efficient system nationwide. But especially in places like the San Luis Valley, we know that there's going to be a lag. So if we have a power outage because of a big winter storm, you're not instantly going to have someone from your town or someone from the county knocking on your door, turning on your power, plowing your roads. There's going to be a little delay. And then that even gets extended, that if there's something that we as the valley are snowed in, help from Denver area or help from out of state is not going to be able to get there as quickly. So individuals need to make sure that they have some resources at their own level to be able to help get them until there's a broader response.
Oh, then too, there's relying on your neighbors, your community as well.
Yeah, I like that Kay brought that up. And I think that that's really important. And you see that in emergencies, that people want to take care of each other. Those communities that know their community and have structure where they are interacting, they're the healthier ones that are going to make it through things better.
And Will, rounding us out again, community resiliency. What is the role of behavioral health in disaster preparedness and response?
When we respond to a disaster, in our field, we call them traumatic events. It's really to ensure that everyone is having their basic needs provided. In other words, it's kind of like a second step, making sure people aren't falling through the cracks. Even if someone walks into our clinic today, we're doing the same thing. We're making sure that they have the housing that they need, they have the powers on in their home in the winter, they have the heat, those sorts of things. Because if we're looking at someone that maybe come in with lots of anxiety, if they don't have those basic needs taken care of, there's no point in focusing on the anxiety. We need to fix, you know, the basic needs first. So when we go to a traumatic event or a disaster, that's what we're focusing on. We're making sure that they have those things so that way they can bounce back. You know, that's the definition of resilience, getting back to normal as quickly as possible. So if they have those basic needs, that's what we're looking for. We also work closely with those that are the first responders, making sure that they're not working 24/7. Many of us feel like we can't stop because there's other people in need. But if we're not taking care of ourselves, it's hard to help others. We're making sure that they are taking time to de-stress, decompact, you know, themselves and taking care of themselves, making sure they're getting sleep. One of the big things during a traumatic event is we stop sleeping. Whether it's because of we're working so hard or because of the things that we've seen or experienced, it interrupts our sleep cycles. And that has a lot to do with how resilient we can be. One of the forms of therapy that I like to talk about is called EMDR, which stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And it deals with REM sleep, which stands for rapid eye movement, or deep sleep, or stage 4 sleep. It has lots of names. And when we're sleeping, our eyes actually move. So now you have to go and sneak up on a family member and see if their eyes are moving while they're sleeping. The eyes moving is a physical manifestation of the brain processing the events of the day. So if we stop sleeping, we stop processing those events of the day. And if we come across something that's traumatic, maybe the smell of the fire, or if we're in a car accident, the sound of the squealing tires, those things become triggers and they can essentially haunt us until we get it processed. So this EMDR, this therapy, the clinician, a trained clinician, uses the eye movement while you're talking about the event to process that event, and it removes those triggers so that way it's no longer a traumatic event. We'll still remember it. It's not removing it from our memory, but it removes the hurt or the triggers itself. I just bring that up because it just emphasizes how important sleep is, even during these traumatic events or disasters.
I understand, too, you have an upcoming suicide prevention event. Do you want to mention that?
Yes, I'd love to. So on September 26th, we have an individual called, his name is Kevin Hines. He attempted to take his life by jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge. He says the instant his hands left the rail that he regretted it. He didn't want anyone to think he wanted to die. So he attempted to start fighting for his life as much as you can when you jump off the Golden Gate Bridge. Fortunately, he did live. Less than 1% of those that do jump actually live. So now he travels the world speaking about what brought him to the point of wanting to commit suicide, why he thought he needed to, and what he believes would have stopped him in the moment. He'll also be speaking on how we can ensure we're taking care of ourselves. So going back to this self-care, how we can make sure we're taking care of ourselves and those that are around us, and what signs that we can watch for in our family members and friends that may be inclined that they are thinking of suicide, and how we can intervene in a loving way and potentially save a life.
Let's go back around the table here, and we'll just throw this out. Anybody can answer, or you don't have to. If you could dispel one incorrect or preconceived notion about preparing for disasters or just simple disruptions, what would that be?
I would say it starts today. It's those little things that we do in life. When you go in for mental health, you know, I mentioned I didn't understand what mental health was when I first started. It's not some weird thing that's happening. It's clinicians that are helping us kind of map out the future. You know, after a traumatic event or a disaster, it's hard to know what tomorrow is going to look like or a week from now or a month from now. And through special skills that they've developed and techniques, they help us understand and map out a future that's not cloudy. As far as preparing, I think it comes down to every day, you know, making sure that we have that little emergency fund that brings us some comfort to know that if something did happen, we might be able to buy a new refrigerator if it goes down and we don't lose all of our food. So it's just those little things in life that make a big difference during those disasters.
Another thing too with mental health, the stigma that still seems to be there, unfortunately, that there's something wrong with you if you need to go see a counselor or a psychologist. That's just not true.
There is the stigma, like you mentioned, and we noticed it during the spring fire. Individuals didn't want to come to our table that we had set up because they don't want to be associated with someone that may have a mental issue. One of my favorite definitions of mental health is a striking a balance in all things in life, which means by that definition, we all have mental issues. You know, that's going down to financial, it's, you know, having an emergency plan, you know, a balance in all things. And so that's what we focus on is making sure that people have that balance or helping them restore that balance after a disaster.
And this is totally a side note as we're talking about having it be something that everyone should be aware of. There's another training behavioral health offers that's called Mental Health First Aid. And we have first aid classes, CPR classes that so many of us take as a normal part of you're a teacher, you're a EMT. And this Mental Health First Aid is trying to become that same idea that you can get some basic skills so you can help someone that's in a mental health crisis and it is getting them to the correct help. And so we are all having this opportunity to be prepared for mental health support in the community.
And at this time, we're actually not offering that class, but if they are interested, they can give me a call and I can get them connected with an individual that is certified to teach the mental health first aid.
All right. And the contact information will be listed on the webpage for this particular podcast. So check that out if you need to. You'd like to add to that?
Yeah, something I want to add, as well as being prepared every day. It's really for everyone. It's not just for people on the East Coast when they have hurricanes or people in California when there are fires. Things happen to people every day, and things can happen to you or your children or your parents. So it's really something that everyone should be concerned about.
And I think to tag on to what Kay says, in the San Luis Valley, because we are isolated, even though we don't have tornadoes or hurricanes, at least not on a regular basis,
right,
it's very easy for something to happen where power could go out or something to happen where we have high windstorms or snowstorms that isolate people or knock out infrastructure. And even if it doesn't become a major issue where you have to evacuate your home or you have a life loss, you can very quickly be in a situation where you don't have gas or you don't have transportation or you don't have a way to call because your phone is not able to charge. So it's really important just to think of some of this preparedness because it's going to happen at some point to you.
What are some of the biggest challenges your organizations face as far as preparedness, especially as it pertains to we people who live here in the San Luis Valley?
I think for public health specifically, but government agencies in general, is that we don't have a lot of people here living in the San Luis Valley, which I think is partially why many of us live here. But because of that, a lot of people wear multiple hats. Take, for example, my role. I'm the public health director. I'm also the public information officer for Rio Grande County. I'm a chair of the Healthcare Coalition, and I help oversee the work of the VOAD in some sense. So if there was some kind of incident that affected my department, I suddenly wouldn't be able to do all these other roles. And so we lose a lot of that capacity. And so I think that trying to find ways to get people involved in different areas, like with the VOAD, really helps support our system because we do things really well because we're connected and we know who people are. But once there's an actual incident, we don't have a lot of depth. We don't have a lot of people that can help back up certain positions or help fill in. And so we really need to depend on the support of others and try to find new ways of filling in those areas.
I would say that, you know, people don't really know what we do. People don't know that there are resources out there that the government and these agencies will come to help.
I'll just say, you know, the biggest hurdle that we have is, like what you mentioned, is the stigma, overcoming that. You know, people don't want to come to our booth or admit that they may need some external help. When we're meeting with people, we're ensuring that they're taking care of themselves. We're making sure that they have that balance in their lives. If it's, you know, at the spring fire, we're teaching coping skills, different ways that they can learn to deal with stress in their life and how they can overcome that without having too much difficulty. They can bounce back quickly. So we encourage people to sleep and to talk to people openly, whether it's us or a loved one, about the different events that are happening in their lives, and that will do wonders.
And just one more thing to add, because we are looking at ways that the community can get involved. If you have an agency, a group that wants to get connected to learn more about preparedness or how you can be ready when there is an emergency in the Valley, Nicole Rosecrans, or Nikki Rosecrans, is the San Luis Valley VOAD coordinator. And her information will be posted on the site, but there's also a Facebook page that's San Luis Valley VOAD. And that is an easy way for you just to get connected, and she is more than willing to come and talk to a group or give you some more information so you can find a way to get connected.
And to wrap up, let's touch again one more time, the How to Prepare for Anything workshops happening September 28th, 8:30 to 11:30 here in Monte Vista.
Just to end off, it's 2 hours, it's on a Saturday, it's a fun opportunity to maybe not think about zombies, but to think about how you can be better prepared to take care of yourself and your family. So come join us on September 28th.
Well, Emily, Will, Kate, we certainly want to thank you all for taking time to tell us about what's going on, how you all are able to help people in times of stress or emergencies or even little incidents that happen. All the information, your contact stuff will be on the webpage as well. We certainly urge people to reach out to you if they need and come on out to this class happening the 28th and learn some things. Thank you all.
Great. Thank you, Adam.
So, now you know. Everyone can help out their own communities as well as reach out to others when the need arises. Please read all the information on this webpage. Find your place where your skills and efforts can best be used. Contact that agency and let them know your willingness. You will be called upon to help when the time comes. Thank you to Calvary Baptist Church and Pastor Bob Gailey for hosting this workshop. Pastor Bob welcomes you and encourages you to attend the free How to Prepare for Anything workshop on Saturday, September 28th from 8:30 until 11:30 a.m. Calvary Baptist Church is located at 2160 Sherman Avenue in Monte Vista. Preparing you for a few disruptions will prepare you for any disaster. You really can prepare for almost anything when you have the knowledge and tools. The people presenting at the How to Prepare for Anything workshop will share that knowledge and give you those tools. All you have to do is show up. It doesn't get any easier than that. There is so much important information available, and one podcast just can't cover it all when we're discussing such wide-reaching and unpredictable situations. Reading the information on this webpage, listening to the podcast, and most of all, attending the workshop will help you to become prepared, not scared.
We appreciate you telling your friends to listen to the podcast on slvoices.com and check out our extensive calendar of events, more listings in one location than any other website around. You can help spread the word, too, by joining our Facebook group, SL Voices, Your Voice in the San Luis Valley, and liking our posts on other social media outlets. Also, check out our Instagram page for behind-the-scenes looks at what we do. And please, patronize our local sponsors. Remember to support the businesses here in the Valley. Most are owned and operated by your friends, family, and neighbors. We all love this area and want to see it flourish. And you can help by buying and supporting locally in your own and surrounding communities. Check back for another local podcast soon. Until then, this has been San Luis Valley Voices, a production of SL Voices, your voice in the San Luis Valley.